It's the Raven and the Blues on BFBS Radio 2 and also on Skybird Radio on the east coast of the USA. An email from Andy Selby on the 3rd of November last year says, "Great to hear Darren Narendorf on the show, as he's very popular here in the northeast of England when he plays at Bladon. He'd be perfect to play live in your studio, as his solo acoustic work is truly amazing. I know he's based in the UK, so it wouldn't be difficult to get him hold of him and get him on the programme. Anyway, just a thought. Andy, it was a good idea, and welcome to the studio, Darren Narendorf."
Thanks, Andy. How you doing?
Do you know Andy?
I probably know the face. I know the gig he's talking about. It's a really great gig up there in Bladon, Newcastle. Really good people. And I've played there quite a bit over the last 5 years or so.
Yeah. Which is about the length of time you've been in the UK, isn't it?
Yeah, roughly? About 5-6 years. Mm. Yeah.
What brought you here?
I'm not really sure. Just I was living in Melbourne at the time, and I had a pretty domestic life with a girlfriend, and it was all pretty normal, except I was a musician. And one day I just sort of thought, this is just not me. So I just thought I'll go somewhere, and I don't know why I came here, but I just did.
But there's a good blues scene in Australia, though, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a great scene. Yeah, there's lots of great musicians too. There's less work. There's less gigging work, but there's still great quality gigging work, but not the amount that there is in the UK and Europe. Mm. And I think there's a lot of it. There's a really strong network of supporters of this kind of music in the UK as well.
So you just got on a plane and came?
Yep. About 1,200 quid and one telephone number of a guy who ran a blues club down in Kent. Mm-hmm. And I got a gig supporting someone that night, and that was my start.
And according to your website, for the next 5 years or thereabouts, you don't become part of the man. You work on your own. You set out over the front of the stage and out the back of the van, and you just are a travelling blues musician, really.
Pretty much, yeah. I wasn't really too fussed about anything more. I just thought, well, whatever happens, happens, and that'd be fine. As long as I'm making a living and I can eat and have a good time, then I was happy. And it just kind of started to snowball. I started to get some good festival slots and a good club circuit. And I think just by necessity, like, this is the first album I've really commercially released where I've put it out to stores and distribution. And it's been really great. I've had a really great reaction from people at that level too.
What caused the leap from making your own albums and selling them over the front of the stage to actually, if you like, as you say, sort of doing it and doing it more legitimately, so to speak? What made you decide to go that route?
Well, I think that over those years, I just played and played and built my audience, and it kind of plateaued, and I don't think there's any more you can do, really. Mm. There's only so much you can do by word of mouth. But I also thought there'd be a risk if I just kept doing that I'd sort of wear out the circuit and maybe, burn myself out. And I thought I'll try and give a little nudge and see what happens. And it's been really great, and the album's been received well, and it's been a really nice experience.
And then all of a sudden, because of this, the Rattling Wheel album, I was looking at the various dates you've done and the interviews you're doing, and so now it's all the sort of the top end things, Paul Jones and all the major sort of radio networks and radio blues shows as well.
Yeah, I know, it's been amazing. Like, I had the great experience going to Maida Vale Studios, recorded there, and went to a session with Bob Harris, and I've listened to Bob's show a lot over the years. Like, on the road, I'll finish a gig, on a Saturday night, I listen to Bob doing his things and stuff, and never sort of even considered I'd be on any of those things, and all of a sudden I was doing all these shows, and it was a great experience, really good.
Has it changed your lifestyle very much?
Not really. not a bit. No, just, just the same person.
Yeah.
Do the same things I always do, go to the pub on a day off, and go play in pubs on my days on.
Have your audience changed very much then? Or is it too early yet?
Well, it's strange. I think, like, when I first got here, I got a predominantly blues audience of older sort of men and women who were really into their blues stuff. And then on the south coast of England, I got a young audience following me. And also out in Herefordshire, I had, like, a really young audience following me. And I think it's geographical, it changes. So, for example, if you've done a big, say if you do the big blues, the Colne Blues Festival, next time you go up to Colne to play, you'll get a lot of people that will go to the festival, and a lot of people might be a bit older. But then if you do, say, the Lama Tree Festival down in Wiltshire, there are a lot of young people, so then a lot of young people come to your gigs you start doing in the area. I think it's what you first get your first bit of exposure with sort of can dictate. But I have a cross-section of young to old, black, white, red, yellow, everything. So I'm not sort of a traditional purist in music. I don't really play pure blues or pure folk or pure anything. And so it's just up to people whether they like it or not.
Well, we'll talk about your set list and how it changes and all the other aspects. Can we have something from you live to start off with?
Absolutely, yeah. I'll just put my coffee down there. I love the coffee. Okay, this is off the Rattling Wheel. It's called Shipwreck. Maybe heaven, maybe cruel, be the hammer you're unto. Every new morning belongs to me. Leave the broken glass rain and the crippling stage and find a brand new Galilee. We all keep making those same old yesterdays. We all keep making those same old yesterdays. Better to be shipwrecked. Better to be shipwrecked. Better to be shipwrecked, man, than never sail at all. Everything's crazy, the feet is feet. Every friction, it craves an addiction. Every void holds a key. There'd be no sailing, yeah, in this company. But I will sail where safety fell far into the unknown sea. We all keep making those same old yesterdays. We all keep making those same old yesterdays. Better to be shipwrecked. Better to be shipwrecked. Better to be shipwrecked, man, than never sail at all.
Taking off the new album, The Rattling Wheel, Darren Narendorf, live in the studio here. What made you choose that particular one to start with? Is that a one you're comfortable with? Or
Yeah, I think so. It's a good. It's. I think I when I play live, a lot of the time I start with that as well because it's sort of, it's not too. I think it's a musician kind of thing. It's not too difficult to start with. It's inside your abilities, you know, quite a bit without sort of doing anything too risky and totally ballsing it up. You know?
Yeah, I'm not a musician, but I've worked with enough bands, and I kind of call it the establishing number, the one you go out and you're comfortable with, and it gets you warmed up, and you can look at the crowd, and especially if you're a band, the band also, you can just sort of generally gel together during that first number.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's just a nice sort of warm-up song, yeah.
Why the blues? Was it always the blues, or did you graduate to it?
Well, I kind of graduated out of it, I think. I started in playing electric guitar in blues bands, and had a really great time doing that. And then I really got into singer-songwriters like Loudon Wainwright, Richard Thompson, Bob Dylan, Tom Waits. And so, but I had this blues background. I started sort of mixing in all the songwriting, and it just sort of... And a lot of the songwriters I listened to, and there was also Steve Earle, so there's sort of this country tinge to it as well. And it all just ended up mixing together and kind of sounding like that. It wasn't really a conscious thing. It just sort of happened.
That was while we were in Australia.
And here also it developed as well.
Because that was the next question, really. Did it change, did those influences and the way that the way you were writing, did that change when you got here?
Absolutely has, yeah. I used to write, I'll show you something here. Being in Australia, I used to write a lot of things were very sort of sparse sounding, like the landscape, like a sort of... things that sounded like open spaces. Things that reminded me of driving my car through country Australia. Yeah. And then when I came here, I lived with a female English folk singer-songwriter for a couple of years in Southampton. And she introduced me into English folk music, which was an extremely depressing experience. But then after a while, I really learned to love the music, and I really appreciate and love English folk music. So then I started to...
When you say depressing, do you mean because it's a hand on the ear and...
Well, no, it's like, you know, the song is, you know, my husband works in the coal mine, now he's dead.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sad, and I'll never love anyone else. And the next song is my husband, you know, works in a submarine, and all that kind of thing. And so it's... But I really love the music, the beauty of it, and the sort of the romance of the songwriting and the storytelling and all that kind of thing. And so that kind of started creeping in as well a little bit. And so for a while I was writing a lot of sort of finger-picking things. Yeah. And then I sort of mix in the finger-picking with the sparse stuff I was showing you before, and then it just all sort of melt into something. Like a big melting pot of stuff.
So it's a kind of a blanket you've made out of lots of little bits of influences, which is now all you, basically.
Yeah, and my voice has changed quite a bit too. I made a conscious decision for the Rattling Wheel to sort of totally change my voice because a lot of the stuff I'd done before, I had a very different singing voice, and I'll try and do it if I can. But so say if like that sparse kind of thing. This place is like a ghost town. No to hear me howl. So it was a lot more sort of technique and that kind of thing. And then with the Rattling Wheel, it was kind of a rougher sounding album. There was like a really heavy drummer and the songs had a real life to them. So I kind of I was with my girlfriend and she studies singing and stuff, and I said, went through all these different voices. What about this one? Will that suit the drums and the thing? What about this one? They came up with that kind of real gravelly thing. It's probably really terrible for my throat, and I'll probably lose my voice in, you know, 6 months, but it's worth it for a good album, you know.
Yeah, it's true. Because Rod's voice, they said that the anodes, or not the anodes, but the whatever he got on his throat were caused by years and years of singing, I guess, in the Rod Stewart style.
Yeah, it's kind of a blessing, isn't it?
It is a bit, yes.
I think, in a way, like... you know, should be able to argue that cigarettes are tax deductible if you're a blues musician. You know?
Is your time in the UK just part of an onward journey?
I don't know. I haven't really got any plans. I just thought, well, just, you know, if I'm having a good time. And I've always loved being here for some reason. It suits me for some reason. I love the humour and all these kinds of things. Like I ideally love Australia, and it's always been my home. But I really do. Get on well here for some reason. You know, I think I'm just kind of funny and annoying to people, and they kind of like that, you know. And I have a really good time here, you know, and I've got good people working with me, and there's lots of great gigs, and, you know. And
I guess the distances are going to be a bit shorter as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, so, for example, when I was in Australia, and I was seeing a girl there quite a few years ago, and, you know, if you'd driven off to Sydney to do a gig, and something went wrong, I don't know, if she had to go to the doctor or something, and wanted to get back, you couldn't.
Yeah.
You know, but here, say, you can be anywhere. You know, it's going to be the most 5 hours away or something at night or whatever.
Well, I think the thing with the UK is everything is 5 hours away.
Yeah.
Dave Kelly, when he was here, sort of, I think, November time, he was saying, you know, that what gets him is after sort of 40 years of travelling through it's how, even with all the motorways and everything else, it's actually getting worse. And he set off for a gig and actually got there for the second set, you know, where the blues band had to start without him.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah. Like, I had some experiences like that. I went to do a radio session up in Leeds a couple of days ago, and I left from New Forest, and I thought to myself, and I had a mate of mine in hospital in Cambridge, and I thought, I'll go stop in the hospital and see him in Cambridge on the way and say hi. And so I left about 11:30 to go to Leeds. I thought, well, that'd be, you know, 5 hours, five and a half or whatever. And I got there at 9 o'clock at night, so it'd taken me 9.5 hours. Yes. And didn't go to Cambridge either.
I see. I was going
to
say...
sorry, yeah. I know, you're going to have to wait, you know. don't go getting any worse for a minute, because I'll see you next week, you know. Yeah, so it can be. But at night, it's a totally different country. And then I drove back from Leeds down to Stamford at nine. It took me, you know, an hour and 15 minutes.
That's true. Yeah. I get ribbed. First of all, a couple of things. We've got friends and listeners in Australia, and a couple of people, one person in Australia and one in New Zealand, who actually live here in the UK and head south for the winter. And so, and they sort of head for the warm weather and things, but they know exactly what you're talking about. But the, I mean, the other aspect is, though, that at night it does, you know, the roads do clear dramatically.
And, oh, it's and amazing,
such
yeah.
A benefit it's, to it, yes.
It's because I came down here today, which is, what's that? So, Stamford to London,
120 miles. Yeah.
And I got up at because I got back late last night from another radio thing, and so I thought, well, I'm going to get up at 8:30. I'll go give you sort of 5-6 hours sleep, and I'll just risk that I'll be on time. And I actually got a good run today, and I was on time.
You were on time,
and yes. Rather leave an hour early, which you usually do, but I thought, no, I got here on time, so that was good.
We're good to have you in the UK for a few years yet. Then it's not you're not sort of looking now at the next place to move on.
No, I'm happy at the moment. I don't see any reason to go anywhere or do anything. You know, I have a really good time here. So, I've got great people in my life and good work. So. You know, I don't think there's any reason to leave.
What about the blues scene in Europe? Because it's much stronger, it tends to be much stronger, and especially in the Netherlands and Germany, very strong and active blues scene. Are you traveling there much?
I know there's about Europe. I think there's a difference. I think there's a different taste over there, or it seems to be that electric blues seems to go really well over there, and there's a big market for electric blues bands. As far as what I do, it's a bit... I don't know if they're up for it just yet, you know, or I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Or, I found that when I played in France, I had an amazing reaction. And then the first time I went to Germany, they weren't too sure. And people in Germany now, they like what I do, and they've come around to it. And I love playing there. But the first couple of times I went there, weren't quite sure. And
were you supporting or solo?
I've done things over there. I've done solo, I've supported, I've done bits and pieces. I haven't been over there in the last couple of years.
Right.
I went over, actually, I did go over last year for a weekend, a few gigs, but nothing really, no real big tours to speak of. And I'd like that to happen, and I think there's definitely, you know, there's definitely a place there for me. It's just a matter of, it's like all these things, you can pursue it and try and find the contacts and do all that and bang your head against the wall and I sort of think, well, I'll just do what I do and have a good time. If it's meant to be, it'll come.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I'll get there and do some more stuff at some stage.
Yeah, that will.
I mean, every year I have, you know, we're going to get you a tour on this date and, you know.
I think having the new album is going to make a difference too.
There's been some interest over there for it. Yeah. And I know, like, things like all these things like iTunes and stuff, all these new, you know, ways of buying music. And so I'm tracking that people are buying the stuff in Spain, they're buying it in Germany and France and things. So there's people into it. It's just a matter of getting there in the right capacity, which will happen at some stage, I'm sure.
Let's have some more music.
Okay. Right. Well, I'll do... This is... this song is... Actually, I have to have a total mental blank. I've done this the last couple of nights. Right. So I'll do a ballad. This song called Shatter Like Stars. I see her face in Melbourne town. I swear she loved in vain. That's where love let her down. You may hold her close. Like a child with your arms feeling strong and your heart running wild. And if you break her heart, she will shatter like stars. They will fill the sky wherever you are, wherever you are. You may see the crumbling wind dancing in air. The ocean begins, and this world does end. You may kiss it gently and tell her she's the one. She may love you strongly like a fool, you may run. And if you break her heart, she will shatter like stars. They'll fill the sky wherever you are. Wherever you are, and you be running for so long. Yeah, you be running for so long, you forget what you're running from. If you break her heart,
She will shatter like stars, and they will fill the sky wherever you are, wherever you are, wherever you are. Wherever you are.
You're listening to The Raven and the Blues on BFBS Radio 2 and also on Skybird Radio, and also listening to Darren Naundorf. I think I know the answer to the question before I ask it. Are you a head or a heart man, judging by the lyrics?
Head or a heart man? Depends. I think everyone's a bit of both, aren't they?
I don't know. I have a feeling that perhaps your heart perhaps rules more than the head sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah. I think that changes too. last couple of years, I think I'm a bit more head than I was a couple of years ago. And some of these songs I wrote a couple of years ago. I don't know.
Able to switch between the two.
Yes, I think so, yeah.
You say that you wrote a couple of years ago. Is your songwriting changing then, dramatically, do you think?
It is changing, yeah. But I like that too, because I don't want to be doing
well,
the same.
It has to, doesn't it?
Yeah, but also I could have done that that deserty kind of stuff I was saying I wrote in Australia for the rest of my life, I wanted. But I've done that, you know. I might come back and do some more of that later, but I want to try some other things as well. And like the Rattling Wheel, and probably the next album I do will be quite rocky and up-tempo. The Rattling Wheel sells pretty up-tempo, and I'm sort of liking that sort of Springsteen kind of flavour, you know, and it's the first time I played with a band in 10 years, and so I'm just like a bit like a kid getting carried away with it. I'm just like, oh, let's just rock, you know, let's just like really rock, and I'm having so much fun with it.
How much are you promoting the album with the band at all, or...?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right.
I've been touring with the band around the UK, and really enjoying it, being great fun. Great bunch of guys and amazing musicians and right laugh too. The good thing is as well, like the drummer's just hilarious. He's an old mate of mine, and I've known him for about five, six years. From when I first got here, he was one of the first people I met. And when I was going on the road, I thought, wow, I've got to take him and be funny. You know, so you're driving to a gig and you're like, you've been laughing the whole way there before you start. So it really lightens the mood. And by the time you get on stage, you're just enjoying yourself. And I think that's really important for the gigs, for people in the audience. If you're having a good time, they'll love it too.
But it's a different discipline, isn't it? Being the leader of the band and having to, you know, work up. You can't change the set list halfway through, can you? Easily.
I never have a set list.
You don't?
No, I can't stand them. sometimes like, I'll write something new and just throw it at the band, and just they're good enough to follow along.
All right.
And I like to keep it fresh and keep the crowd interested, keep myself interested too, because I do so much work that if I did the same thing night and night again, I just get so bored and stale, you know. And it's no good for anyone. It's not good for me. It's not good for people watching. So I just try and change it and keep it interesting. So people that come never know what's going to happen. And we don't know either, really.
Which is a good thing, because if you've got a fan base who travel as well, they don't want to hear the same thing as they said.
Yeah, note for note, you know, it's a bit much, you know. So I try and stretch myself live, you know, and challenge myself a bit and do stuff that, well, I don't know if I'm going to pull this off, but we'll give it a go. And that's it makes for a lot of fun. It makes it a bit more on edge.
How big's the band?
It's only me, drummer, and double bass player.
All right.
The double bass player is kind of like, I hate to use a cricket analogy here, but...
You're allowed to.
He's kind of like Shane Warne. He's two players. But his bass player is like two musicians. He plays with a bow, he plays double bass, and he's an amazing, amazing guy, amazing musician. So he pulls out all sorts, kinds of drone sounds, and as well as just playing bass, he pulls out lots of things that really add to the flavour of what we're doing. And the drummer's great. He's a real sort of rock drummer, and sort of glues it all together. So if you can imagine, like, say, when I think of bands from, say, the 60s, like, say, like The Who or the Jimi Hendrix Experience, like, had these amazing musicians going mad around each other, but there was always one person, like, say, Noel Redding playing the bass in the middle, just keeping it, locking it down, while everyone did everything else mad around it. And, or, you know, same with John Entwistle and people like that. They kind of lock it all together while everyone's going nuts. And that's what the drummer does when Rick and I just sort of go off in this thing, and he just kind of keeps it all together somehow. And we sort of catch up with him back on the beat of one about 2 minutes later somewhere.
Right, yeah.
You
know. But basically, the drummer is the person. This is sort of the main sort of the cement keeping the
absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Well, I've had the opposite before. Where I played in a duo for a few years with a drummer. And both of us just went mad. And there was never any beat. It was just like... The prerequisite was we're never going to do a 4-4 beat. It's just going to be whatever. We'll just make it about dynamic and space. And that was really fun too. So this is kind of like the opposite with this drummer, but then the bass player is more like that.
Yeah.
And which makes it exciting, you know.
And do you find a kind of leveler of responsibility, if you like, because basically it's your band? I mean, do you have to keep... do you feel you have to sort of act as an arbitrator sometimes?
Not really. I just want to make sure that they're happy and enjoying themselves. Like, you know, occasionally, you know, and just make sure that... like, occasionally you get offered a gig and, you know, oh, it's really good exposure, but, you know, the money's not that great, but if you do it, it leads to other things. And you know, I feel bad if we... Like, if we have a good night, it's great. I can give them a bit more cash and they had a good time. And I like to try and keep them enjoying it and make sure they're happy because, you know, an unhappy band's, you know, a bad thing. Like, there's, you know, I don't feel like that at all. I just want them to have a good time. And if we're having a good time, it'll work, you know.
I think a lot of people don't realise that it can be soul-destroying at times, the life of a musician on the road. And, you know, sometimes you get there and it's gate money and nobody turns up, you know. And all... I mean, there are some real heartaches along the way, so...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And when I first came here, and I started in London and I was, you know, I was playing, and I remember there was one night myself and the drummer walked out of the gig and we had £8. And I said, well... share a kebab on the way back. It can be.
Yeah.
But as you build your audience, it starts to turn around a little bit.
Yeah. Obviously, you enjoy festivals because the way you were talking about them earlier on, it's something which you throw.
Yeah, I love them. Yeah, fantastic. I really find that's a place that's really, really suited. Like where you get a chance to get in front of a really big crowd, and I love the challenge of having, say, if you've got 2,000 people there, of trying to make them all shut up. Like, that's a real big challenge. And if you get it right, it can really work. And then the feeling in like a tent or a marquee or something, when you get that right and there's that many people and you're all sort of in the same place and you can the music can take everyone in the same place is unbelievable. You know, that's I love that kind of thing.
It's difficult to tell when we do the sessions here. Nearly everybody, I think, it's in almost every case, it's been seated and it's just you and I. But on stage, are you normally standing or?
Yeah, stand up. Mm-hmm. I've played 12-string guitar as well, and I've been sitting down playing that last couple of months only because I've lost my strap and I haven't got another one yet. But the 6-string, I stand up and play. Yeah,
right.
I like to. Yeah, I don't like to, when people think of acoustic, they think that, you know, you've got to sit in the corner and playing nice, and I don't like that. I like to sort of, you know, get into it and, you know, and jump around and
move around the stage. And
yeah,
the stage.
Get sweaty and have a good time, you know.
In terms of the new album, you mentioned it, sort of, how many of the tracks are already in place of that, in terms of, you know, written?
6 or 7.
Right.
Yeah, I've got 6 or 7. Well, when I say written, what I always do is I have, like, a bunch of ideas or half songs, and once I get a bunch of ideas and half songs that go past, sort of, 13 or 14, then I'll just sit down and probably put them all together, you know, and structure them and do all that kind of thing, which usually takes... 2 or 3 weeks to.
And is that something which you think, oh shit, I don't want to do that, or is it eventually you think, oh, I've got to have to do it now?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what you were saying before about the heart or head man, and you have to be prepared to sort of go, okay, I've got to be a heart man for a week or two here and sort of lock myself away, and sometimes you just don't feel like doing that, you know. But I do enjoy it. I really enjoy it. But I try and structure it now, so I go, okay, I've got a couple of weeks to sort all this out and just try and, you know, get into the frame of mind where, you know, you turn the phone off, you're getting away from people calling you for gigs or whatever, so you can have a free mind, and then once you've got a free mind, then you can sort of get into the mode of, right, I've got to, you know, finish this album, make this album come together. And then you get a nice, you know, thread. And I think also doing it all in one sitting, when you sort of get together, sort of finish it all off, if you're doing it in one sitting, you've got the same sort of mood and vibe going on in your mind, and then by the time you finish, it actually creates a nice thread through the album in some way, because it kind of ties them together. If that makes sense.
I forgot my next question. I know, something cropped in mind there. I was thinking, oh, yeah, we'll follow on from that. What's to do with the album? Never mind. I'll tell you what, while I get my head together and think of what I was going to ask you, can we have something else?
Yeah, okay. I always get in trouble for doing this, but I'm going to play a new song. Because I'm supposed to be playing things off the album, promoting the album.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, well, yeah, I know what the question was now, but we'll have the new thing first.
Then. Okay.
Yes, go.
Okay, so this is a new song. Sorry for people I work with who are going to get mad at me.
You join the nightclub trash as you're flooding down the neon drains. You lap behind an engaged sign chained to the cane. Straighten all your curls, stone in your stare. Marks on your ski and nothing getting near, nothing with there. People change, scenes explode. Yeah, I ain't staying here just cause you're all that I know. So Michelle, well, oh, you gotta let the beast so cheap to sell. Hey. And lately I've been learning that all your doors are burning. The color of my warning is all I see. It ain't no rescue at all, just yourself in your torn up clothes. And I ain't begging just to feel the weight of your claws. People change, scenes explode. And I ain't staying here just cause you're all that I know. So Michelle, well, oh, you gotta let the thing so cheap to sell. Pin it all on a cross, like you're risen from the dead. While those chained to the chain that blame you for all their regrets. There ain't no saving at all, just yourself in your torn up clothes. Ain't coming out here begging just to feel the weight of your clothes. People change, scenes explode. Yeah, I ain't staying here just cause you're all that I know. So Michelle, well, oh, you gotta let the beast so cheap to sell. So Michelle, well, oh, you gotta let the beast so cheap to sell.
Is that something we're going to presumably see on the new album?
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah. That's the question which left me just before that piece, was talking about management and agency and things, because it does seem that you, I had the feeling that you sort of managed your own career path. You were talking about the net earlier on and how you follow the stats coming through, the people going on and things.
Yeah.
And so you're obviously a pretty hands-on guy in terms of your own career. Are you?
Absolutely. Like in saying that, you know, the album's been released and all that kind of thing, well, it's still my own. It's my own record label. Like, we sort of learned how to do it over the years and thought, give it a go.
Mm.
And, yeah, I'm very, very, very hands-on about stuff because there's just so much. The thing is, at least you know you're not lying to yourself, which most of the industry is full of crap,
yeah,
really.
It is.
And it takes a long time to sort of... I think, like, 3% of people in the industry are brilliant and 97% are just out to get your money.
Yeah.
And... But over the years, I've been lucky to find that 3% of people, and it takes time, but then you get there. And and there's some great people in the music industry just doing little cottage industry sort of stuff and looking after themselves and doing okay. And that was sort of the model I wanted to go with. And then if it you know, got successful, then great. And if it made me a living, then great, or whatever, you know.
But you said before the track, you said, I'm going to do something which isn't on the album, and you know, my people will be upset. So presumably you've got the team behind.
Yeah, you know? I've got a couple of people, like, you know, a record company would do. A normal record company would, you know, employ a PR person or this and that, and a couple of different people. And so I've done that through contacts I've got to do different jobs. And they said, "What are you doing? You're meant to be playing stuff off the album." I'm like, "I know, but you know, it's good to give the people something different."
Oh, it is. Yes.
Like I always loved, there was a couple of artists in Melbourne, and I used to listen to Melbourne Community Station every Sunday and listen to like roots music and stuff, and great artists out there who used to be on these programs, and I used to love it when they do something I hadn't heard off their albums. Like, oh, what's that? That's great. And then I say, what was that song you did on the radio? You know, and it always gives you something more's coming. You know, something else is coming. So it always keeps you interested. I don't know about this whole thing of. It's good, yeah, of course, to play one or two things off the album, but you know, it's all about having a good time. You know.
Yeah, I think also there's back catalogue too, stuff that you really want to do or still people may not have heard. I mean, there's kind of an arrogance in radio where you make a radio programme and tend to assume people are going to listen to it all the way through and they'll be there next week, you know, without fail, or even scheduling across the day, you know, they'll just be there all the time. Well, people aren't like that, and the same with musicians. You know, a lot of people are coming all the time to the blues, coming to individual artists like yourself, and if they haven't heard what you've done before and never get a chance to hear, but there are some things, you know, I think you really have to go back.
Yeah,
and catalogue
it's like, you know, if, I don't know, say in the 70s or something, Led Zeppelin were doing a live radio thing and they were doing stuff off their later albums like Presence or whatever, which, you know, are great albums, but then people would miss out on all the, you know, all the great stuff from before that as well. And it's nice to have a bit of a mixture, I think.
You've been around now and building up a reputation and a fan base in the clubs across the UK, and you're starting to see people like Andy, who emailed me, you know, on a regular basis. Do people call out requests? Do you do requests? I mean, do people have their favourites?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I get people who know the stuff and ask, you know, you can play this and or yell it out, and yeah, it's good. It's nice, actually, because you go, oh, I feel like a proper artist. I know my stuff, you know?
And is there, does it vary from where you are in the country, or is there kind of one standout track which everybody seems to?
I think there's about four or five I do, and there's a couple of ballads that people really like, and there's also a few sort of really up tempo ones they like, and they're sort of staple ones that I know if I'm at a gig I can go. If I'm at a gig and things are going bad, and I go, this gig's not really working, there's a couple I can pull out that really sort of, whoa, that'll sort of wake the room up.
Right.
And I think every band or every artist has got something like that, you know, gets a get out of jail card, you know.
Yes.
And so the get out of jail cards are quite popular, and also some of the ballads are quite popular as well.
Have you found that because you've moved, as you said, from more ballads and laid-back acoustic into the new album, The Rattling Wheel is far more energetic.
Yeah.
Have you found that has anybody come up and said, oh, I like the way you used to be, Darren?
Yeah, but I change all the time. Every year that goes past, I sound completely different. They're like, oh, I like you better when you're doing this or doing that or playing with these people and that people. And but you always get that. People, you know, they sometimes get stuck in a moment of what they see you as, and they want to see you as that for, you know, because of their own reasons for a long time. And it's understandable. I'd have the same thing with artists that I've loved. But then you learn to, if you let, and the artists, as they go along, you let them go, and then they find other great stuff along the way as they go along. Mm. And sometimes they get it right, sometimes they get it wrong, but, you know, it's you need to have a journey with it. And, like, for example, like I was always playing, as I said, played electric guitar in blues bands in Australia. And then I came over here and did the acoustic thing for quite a few years and went back to Australia after touring here and started doing some festivals in Australia as an acoustic artist. People wouldn't come and see me because they thought I was an electric artist. And so it's people's perception, you know, of what they see you as. But then it takes a while, oh, yeah, actually, the acoustic thing. And they start to warm to it. And by the time they warm to it, you're doing something else.
Yes.
And then you go on to something else. But I think that's fun, though. It keeps you interested.
You're only young, but do you see a time when eventually you're going to think, oh, I can't be arsed with this, and I want to sit on the back porch and play quietly sort of thing?
Don't know. I kind of like it. I like the... I'm pretty laid back about it all, but I like the challenge of the whole thing as well. Like, to, you know, survive off just having a guitar and a bunch of songs is you know, keeps you on your toes.
Yes.
And it's good fun. And I've also, I'm started helping a couple of younger artists and stuff as well, get going and get their careers and try and help them out. So I'm enjoying that side of it too. I think I'll probably do some more of that later on, where I'll try and help artists emerge through the contacts I've got.
So as your career develops and grows and improves, you also, it's Luther Allison style, isn't it, really, bringing in the people behind?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I really get a buzz out of that. Like, there's so many great artists hidden in little pockets of the world that people have no idea about. And then I love, putting them on a different stage somewhere where they're totally foreign to people, and look on their face, like, my God, this is amazing, you know? And there's lots of those guys around, but they might not have the contacts or had the experience or whatever, and I can do a reasonable job at it, getting them out there. I'm definitely not the best at it, but I can get them an exposure and get them, out there. Like, I'm a musician first and foremost, but I can get them going, or get them tracking at least.
An erudite one, though, and a bright one too, I guess, so it's not something which, in other words, you have the intellect and the IQ to be able to do all of these things along the way as well. So it's not just you're a jobbing musician in a sense, is it?
Yeah, I think you just try and find... and there are other things that are challenging too. It's challenging, getting on the phone and saying, this artist, okay, blah, 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 and setting up something and then just seeing him get a real buzz out of it, a real smile on his face, and I like the buzz out of it. I like the challenge of trying to make things happen. And a lot of the time too, you talk to a lot of venues or festivals and whatever, they haven't heard of them, it can be quite hard work. And so trying to work out ways to actually make sure they do take them, and different angles and stuff. So it's a really great experience. But the more I've learnt about where I came from sort of 6-7 years ago, when I didn't know this stuff, and what people were thinking when I sort of turned up with my guitar, and now it makes a lot of sense about why things went well at certain times and why things didn't, because of what you learn later on through your own experience and how to pitch these things to different people for these other younger artists. So I don't want to harp on about all this sort of stuff too much, but
I think your comment about 97% of the industry are rogues and thieves and vagabonds and 3% are honest is probably a bit generous. It's probably 98.2%. But I get the feeling that you may have met all these rogues and thieves and vagabonds, but actually you've been, either through skill or luck, you haven't actually been ripped off too much in the course of your time.
I've been ripped off pretty badly a few times.
All right.
But the thing about those kind of people is they've either been somewhere or they actually have had some success but can't do it anymore or whatever it is. But if you keep your ears open, you can actually learn quite a bit from them. So if you do get in a bit of trouble or ripped off or whatever, you actually know how to get out of it and how to avoid it for next time. So I think you have to go through those experiences. I don't think if you're an artist and you got into the music industry and it was, smooth sailing the whole way through, there'd be something wrong. That would be abnormal. But you have to meet all these people. You have to experience them. And it sharpens your senses a bit,
Yes.
And so then for if you're helping it, at the moment helping a couple of younger artists or whatever, where not to send them, because you just go, they'll just cut you in the ribbons because they'll fresh meat,
Yes.
So you just try and keep them away from all that and get them with good people and
get what's them. The Andy's Club in Bladen? What's it like?
It's brilliant. Oh, it's a great club, yeah. That's the Bladen Blues Club. I played there many, many times over the years. And it's a really great little
room. Because the Northeast is renowned, because that's where I'm from as well. I left in 76, so, it's a long time ago. But the Northeast is renowned as being a fairly tough venue. And Bladen, especially, used to be one of the toughest parts of town.
I think it's one of the best music audiences in the country up there. They're really fantastic. But also saying that, the Northeast and the Northwest are brilliant. Like, if you go to Maryport and Carlisle and Penrith...
Have you done the Blues Festival at Maryport?
No, but I've heard a rumour I might be doing it this year.
Ooh, that's
the rumour I heard. But
that was my next train of questions, really, which was looking ahead to the year and the festivals, especially as our audience. Have you got any sort of gigs set up in Germany and places like that?
No, but I've got friends in Bielefeld, and I do play over there a bit. Mm-hmm. And it's funny on the Forces Radio, because I have heard the Forces Radio. I've been driving around Germany and around Bielefeld. I've got friends in Bielefeld... got a friend of mine owns a pub in the hills, a little hill sort of thing there, And so I get over there and play a little bit, and I do a couple of gigs down in Coburg. And,
oh, yes.
But that's about it, really. Mm. I'd like to expand it, but we'll you know, keep trying and we'll get there.
And festivals in the UK for this year, anything hardened up yet? Or?
Yeah, there's a few. There's the Broadstairs Folk Festival.
That's nice.
That's a great festival. Yeah. It's such a nice town. Mm. Really good. Mayfest, which is a great emerging festival. That's in Hitchin and Stevenage, that sort of area. A few other bits and pieces. There's a lot of things. It's this time of year now where it's people are making their decisions. Yeah. So the next couple of weeks, if you ask me 2 weeks from now, I'll be able to go tell you which ones they were. I know which ones I'm likely for and not likely, but I don't want to say in case I don't get them or whatever.
Seems right, yes.
And I look like a real fool, you know.
But the website, which you maintain, or you have a webmaster?
No, it's me and Debbie, who's my housemate and works with me on all this sort of stuff as well. Mm-hmm. She maintains it. And the website is www.darrin.info. So it's just darrin.info.
Yeah. And it's up to date as well, because that's the important thing.
It's got absolutely. All the gig lists and everything it's else. It's fresh. So. It's not a stale one. It keeps moving.
Because there are some really ropey sites on
there.
Last gig is August of 2006 and things. And either they're not working, or alternatively, nobody's doing the site.
But
I checked this morning, and yours is pretty up to date.
Oh, well, so. Debbie will be happy to hear that. I'll say, you got a nice mention on the radio, the website.
And that gives links, and can people get the album from there as well?
Yeah, they can. And they can also get it off iTunes. Mm-hmm. In the UK, you can get it HMV, Virgin, places like that. You can get it Amazon online. You can get it online off the website. Pretty much anywhere you can get it.
In the record stores, where is it? Is it under Blues or under?
No, it's under. It's just under normal.
Under normal.
Normal section.
Yeah.
Which it's kind of cool because like I'm not really blues. I'm not really folk. I'm not really anything. I'm just sort of do what I do.
Yeah.
And so they've just thrown me in the big pond with everyone else. But I was a real spin out when. When the album first came out, and I had a friend of mine over from Sweden, and she was in London for like the day, and she said, we'll meet up for lunch. And I've been telling her about all these things I've been doing. She said, well, is your album in the stores? I said, I don't know, it should be, I guess. And I walked into HMV in Oxford Street.
Oh, yes, the big one.
And there it was, right next to Nazareth.
Oh, right.
I couldn't believe it. And I said, look, I said, the shop assistant, I said, that's my album there. And he just looked at me like I was an absolute freak. Like, who cares, you know?
Hold a photograph next to you.
Yeah.
I know who this is, yes.
Yeah, so it's the kind of thing that, I mean, it's kind of level of like my status and the level I'm at means that, you know, bigger stores will stock it where they've got more shelf space, and the smaller stores where they haven't got as much shelf space won't stock it yet, but we're working on that.
Does that mean also that the venues you're playing are getting bigger too?
Yeah, they're getting bigger.
Is that good?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. Because the smaller ones, you can always, I mean, at some stage, you know, it will grow and grow, but I think at some stage, everyone's career goes into reverse, and I think I'll end up back in these places anyway, which is fine by me, you know, like I've got a great network of them. So I just sort of take it as it comes. It's good at the moment. It is. Especially, I think, the place I'm at and the amount of work I've done, and it's nice to get a few rewards, and if it lasts for a few years, then great, and if it doesn't, then, you know, that's the way it goes.
I wasn't meaning good in the sense of, you know, sort of financial things. I was thinking more in terms of you, you know, for work.
I know what you mean, yeah. I enjoy it too. Yeah. I play very differently to a... you do play differently to a bigger or smaller audience.
Yeah.
And they're different skills, and I like learning those skills as well. And in some ways, it's really, it's a real good challenge. As I said earlier, try and make a big crowd be silent, and I really enjoy that challenge too. So I'm enjoying that part of it.
You've got no concept, dear listener, because before you came today, Darren, I just said to my wife, I hope he doesn't get seasick, because we've got about a force 8 gale blowing today, and the boat is rocking from side to side. And,
I know.
And you hardly seem to notice at all, but...
well, I have. I'm trying to hold down my coffee. But this is amazing here. I don't know if the people out there listening can sort of visualise Hampton Court. Is quite amazing, isn't it?
Mm, it is, yes.
It's like an island on the Thames.
Mm. It's a really lucky place to work from. To be able to work from home and do all the various jobs that I do, sort of video and all the rest of it, and make radio programmes.
So we're looking at the moment out the window. I'm looking out at the next door neighbour's houseboat. That's sort of swaying in the force gale. Brilliant.
Fantastic. That's been kind of noisy. Let's close with, what are we going to close with? Something off the album, I would guess, otherwise your team are not going to be finished.
Okay. Something off the album, okay.
Doesn't have to be.
Doesn't have to be.
It could be
Well, I can blame you then.
Yeah, break all the rules.
Righto. Actually, I'm going to do something that I've never done on radio before. I'm going to...
Which is the way we like it.
I'm going to play a song by someone else.
Ooh.
That'll really annoy him. It's a Tom Waits song.
Ah, right.
Tom Waits fan?
An influence of yours, I guess.
Yeah, I love
it. From many years, yes.
Are you a Tom Waits fan?
Yes, very much.
It's one of these strange guitar tunes. You have to bear with me for a second. It'll be worth it. One second. Mad dog, your tilted world. Three shots for a dollar when a real live doll. All the lies that you tell, I believe them so well. Gonna take them back into your red house. If that fearful leap into the dark, well, I did my time in the jail of your arms. Now Ophelia wants to know where she should turn. Tell me, what did you do? What did you do the last time? Why don't you do that? Well, go on ahead and take this wrong way. Time's not your friend. Do you cry? Do you pray? Wish them away. Are you still leaving nothing but bones in the way? Did you bury the carnival with the lions and all? Well, excuse me while I sharpen my nails. And who are you? Who are you this time? You look rather tired. Are you pretending to love? Well, I hear that it pays well. Out of your pistol and your Bible and your sleeping pills go. Are you still jumping out of windows in expensive clothes? Well, I fell in love with your sailor's mouth and your wounded eyes. You better get down on the floor. Don't you know this is war? And tell me, who are you this time? Who are you this time? Who
For the last hour, you've been listening to the music and the conversation of Darren Naundorf. Darren, thanks for being our guest
today. No worries. Pleasure. Thanks for having me.